Hey, over here. I am hiding from everyone. Welcome to part two of the Star Trek Experience podcast, I guess. Try to enjoy it. Shh.
And so eventually we get to this new era of Star Trek, Discovery, Strange New Worlds, Lower Decks, a whole host of Picard, obviously. And again, it's had a lot of fire. It's had a lot of shots fired at it.
Yeah, for sure.
I really enjoyed Discovery, to be honest. First season wasn't so keen on, but I thought once it actually escaped its bindings of Star Trek by the third season, it became really interesting.
And, you know, I have to admit, you know, I really wanted Discovery to succeed. I like the lead actor very much. I liked the character of Saru. I just increasingly found it very dull and sort of not worth the trip. And I feel the reason why, honestly, the serialized story in Star Trek, I don't think works. So if you have a 10-part story, I mean, this was my problem with the remade Battlestar Galactica as well. You know, if you say the Cylons have a plan every episode, by the end of the series, you better darn know well what that plan was and how it played out. You know, Discovery has these, you know, seasonal arcs where you begin with this great crisis, but then you sort of have all of these dips and valleys. And then when you get to it at the end, it's like, was it worth the trip? And see, that's where the stakes are so different from standalone stories. You're just like, okay, God, was this a great episode? Yeah, or no, but you know, next week it's a fresh start, right? Next week it's a fresh start. We can explore something else and Star Trek will be back on its feet, or it won't. But then there's the next week and we'll be in a different story. You know, Discovery being, I almost want to say, mired in these seasonal stories that, I'll be honest, and Picard, I feel, suffers from the same thing. So I want to be clear that I'm not only picking on Discovery. I'm picking on Picard too. It's and even the third season. So the things that, you know, I know a lot of, you know, I know Discovery's not very popular and the third season of Picard was very popular. They do the same thing in the same way. Yeah. They introduce a threat and kind of meander through that threat through the season, and then they wrap it up super fast in the last episode. And you're like, what?
But then this is a play off everything since the 90s. We've talked about this before, but Buffy, X-Files to a degree, but you know, primarily the Whedon stuff, especially this whole thing of moving towards the big bad, which would meander, but you'd have 26 episodes. You could diffuse it in a way which didn't feel so it's gone, it's suddenly there again, it's done.
Listen, I know Whedon is persona non grata at this point, but he did it better than any season of Picard. He did it better than any season of Discovery. I'm sorry. You know, Buffy works as Buffy, you know, in that format. Another series, you know, that did it particularly well, that kind of thing, I felt was, you know, Veronica Mars, not strictly genre, but it was like, here's the mystery of the season. You know, we're working towards solving that mystery. And in the meantime, we sort of have these little mysteries along the way that make it feel like standalone episodes. But then we remind you of where we're going. And then, like, each season do that. You know, I just don't think Picard and Discovery do it very well. And, you know, I think they made a huge mistake in Discovery to take away the quality of Saru that made him interesting, which was sort of his fear response. Mm-hmm. You know, they got rid of that. Like, you know, that's what made him the Data or the Seven of Nine or the Odo or who do we have now? Right. Or the Spock again. Right. Of Discovery. That feeling of fear, you know, that his little gills would come out when he would because he would sense death or danger or whatever. I mean, that was, to me, that was interesting. That was something you could have spent 5 seasons exploring, you know, especially in a show that's like, let's boldly go, right? Well, here you have a guy saying, you know what, let's not boldly go, right? How does that work in Starfleet, right? How do you square those two ideals? How can this alien serve in Starfleet when he's got this fear response? But, you know, they very quickly got rid of that. I still like the character. Doug Jones is great, right? So I don't know. This is a long-winded answer. I just don't think serialized Star Trek works very well. That's my opinion.
No, I get that. I think, as we were talking in the Crunch Point episode, you know, are we getting to a point where we need to be looking more at less serialization. Is that going to become a strategy in, funnily enough, drawing people in by not making them feel pressured to be drawn in?
That's right.
You know, your show's got to be good, rather than just hoping that there's a seed in it, which means people keep following it, because there's just too much stuff for that to really work. But we still see that being played out. The thing I liked about Discovery was the first time since possibly the original series did I feel that it was trying to push some boundaries. And obviously, to some degree, that's where some of its ire has come from. People who do feel sure. that those boundaries have been artificially pushed rather than it feeling natural. And I don't really want to go into into a conversation about that sort of element and the sort of polemics around the new right. Star Trek. But I like the fact that suddenly we were seeing representation for a show that was meant to be showing that everything was fine and great and everyone was considered equal. For up until, 2016 or so, representation of people, queer identity, was just not there. It's as if they'd been eradicated almost from the future universe, apart from, as we say, a couple of representations through aliens of lesbian or gay culture. And I kind of felt that Star Trek should have been the leader of this in terms of science fiction, in terms of Western science fiction. And it just hadn't. And I think a lot of that was because it was trapped in a very sort of conservative studio mindset of keeping it safe. And to the point it kind of, as you say, became derivative and regurgitative of itself right. to a point right. where it just disappeared in the 2000s. Right. And I like the Discovery was trying to do that. And
it's that replicative fading thing, you know, I think that harmed Star Trek in the first half of the 2000s, you know, and that term comes from the second season Next Generation episode, Up the Long Ladder, where they encounter a society of clones, but they need new stem cells or something, because if they keep cloning themselves, they have replicative fading, where like the clones become like sort of less and less impressive. You know, Star Trek has been stuck in that loop, right? And you know, I actually felt that the daring things about Discovery tended to be in the first season. Like, I really thought the idea of having a deeply dislikable, possibly villainous captain on a ship, like, that's an interesting idea for a one-off season, isn't it? Right? The captain of the ship is a bad guy, right? Mm. You know, and all the secrecy and stuff, like, that's different. And that our lead is somebody who mutinied, who's not a captain, who's sort of seeking redemption and, you know, negotiating who she is. Like, to me, that's also really interesting. You know, those are some interesting ideas to make our center of focus not the captain, but also to make the captain somebody who it's like, we got to get him out of there. He is a problem. And then the idea of the Klingons as fanatics, I don't think quite work, but sort of religious fanatics, but it was an ambitious idea. Now we can look at it and say they failed in that idea, but I think it was an interesting idea. You know, that opening with Takovma, I don't know if I said his name right, if I remembered it right, but where he's talking about Klingon Klingon heritage and Klingon lineage and Klingon uniqueness, and you know, we must, you know, remain Klingon, right? Remain Klingon. You know, that was interesting and timely. Where Discovery, I think, got into trouble was it had all of these really narrative new ideas, as you say. But then it's like, okay, you redesigned the Klingons, right? You know, even the new idea of the spore drive, again, by itself, interesting. In a scaffolded universe, you know what everybody said. Well, gosh, why didn't anybody like take this out of mothballs and, you know, see if we could go find Voyager with it, right? Yeah. Just like the idea of the Klingons, their new look is interesting. Their new philosophy is interesting, but it runs afoul of sort of Star Trek tradition. So you can see they were trying to forge forward. And some things I felt like they really did. And then others, like it was like we couldn't get past the weight of Star Trek behind us to appreciate those things. Maybe.
So Is this a problem? And this is where I'll come with Strange New Worlds, where we will probably wrap up, because there's quite a lot to talk about Strange New Worlds. Is this the problem that Star Trek has? Is that unlike Doctor Who, where you can play with your aesthetic because you've got times constantly changing, so you can always get around it in a sort of diegetic way that, you know, the universe is always constantly in flux. But with Star Trek being a sort of linear continuity to some degree, which Strange New Worlds has challenged a little bit in one of its stories.
Right.
Would it just be better that these were just like Pine? Discovery and Strange New Worlds were just alternative universes?
You know, I don't know. I'm not sure. You know, on one hand, yes. You know, I do think that, you know, one thing you've got to say for Star Wars is that they have figured out a way to make a world that was created in 1977. So, you know, a decade later than Star Trek, but they have stuck on that world, and they make that world. It's Andor looks the same. Rogue One looks the same as A New Hope, and that world looks believable. And it's like Star Wars clearly has respect for that. Now, I'm not saying you can put someone on the bridge from 1966. I know you can't, but sort of the idea that we're constantly like changing the look of the Klingons, if we don't need to change the look of the Klingons, you know, speaks of like maybe, you know, a lack of respect somehow. Like, I get it. Like, the new bridge in Strange New Worlds and the new uniforms, they pay homage to the original series while being reflective of our times. But like, I mean, because we saw Worf and Picard, he looks fine, right? The Klingon makeup looks fine. And we've had Klingons redone before. We updated them in the motion picture. And then they got a little minor update in the Search for Spock. They got different kinds of ridges, right? They got individual ridges, right? And then, but it's like, wow, like that was a thing we didn't need to change, because it still was timely and looked good, right? So, you know, and again, like, why did we go to uniforms we've never seen before if it's in the era of the cage, which is, you know, very close to Kirk's era? Kirk would have been in Starfleet, right? Okay. So it's like, you know, the difference between like narratively breaking new ground, which I'm all in favor of, and then just changing things for the sake of change.
Yeah.
You know, that's where we get into trouble. I mean, I like the idea of it being a consistent prime universe. I do. And I think some enjoyment gets taken away from it when you say, oh, it's in an alternate universe, because you can always say, well, that universe doesn't matter. I mean, I'm not saying that's a smart answer, but you kind of feel that way. So you think, oh, you know, I thought we only had three adventures of the Kelvin universe. You know, it's like, but we got 79 of Kirk in the prime. You know, you want it to all fit together, because I do think there is a need in science fiction fandom, for whatever reason.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
To look at this as history, the history of the future to be. And we want to know, what were Pike's adventures? We want to know, what role did Discovery play? And how did that fit into Kirk's universe? And things like, you know, we want it to all be linear like that, where we can say, oh, in 2265, this happened. And then in 2267, this, we're, I don't know what the writer is. You know, we're detail oriented like that as fans.
Well, it's how we make something feel real to us. Is we want to believe in space, and we find stuff which jars with that, makes it hard for us to believe, and thereby invest in believing that these people are real on the screen. I understand why, be it any fandom, soaps, television, play. You know, we all want to have, well, less theatre, but certainly in places which try to depict a proper reality to our, the illusion of reality to our eyes, which obviously a theatre performance can't do in the same way. But certainly for lens-based, I understand this. And for video games too, as well. But I think what gets me with... I agree with you with Discovery. I mean, I've never gone back to rewatch Discovery. I think I was impressed, and I found them enjoyable enough to watch. But they weren't really, I didn't really feel they massively spoke to me. I think the characters grew. I liked some of the choices they made later on, and how the smaller characters became part of the bigger, and it became more of an ensemble. I think Star Trek, sometimes it's danger, and I think Strange New Worlds suffers from this massively, is the same thing that happened with Next Generation, with, again, which seemed to be as history, legacy, mythology whispers have, that Gene Roddenberry didn't like the idea of... Spock, Shatner, and Nimoy having so much power that he'd have an ensemble cast for the Next Generation to mitigate those sort of power relations, which could sometimes get in the way of show vision. But you end up, and I found this was my problem with the 90s, you know, you'd have the who, it was a Russian roulette of who would, so these days that sounds like a really bad Russian roulette. It's a terrible one. Why do we use that? It seems like, you know, a raffle as to who would be the person that the story would be based on. And ultimately, I didn't like a lot of the characters. You know, I love Garrick and Bashir. I really enjoyed them. Odo and Quark, I actually enjoy his background characters. Episodes around them, I found quite boring. You know, Worf episodes in Next Generation, I found extremely tedious because Klingons were really actually quite boring, tribal, nonsensical race by that point, thanks to the movies, really. I like the original series because you always had Kirk, you always had Spock, you maybe had McCoy. So you knew what you were getting. In the same way, you know, watch Quantum Leap. You know you're going to get Sam. You know you're going to get Al. Sometimes audiences want that security, and you've got to have a damn good ensemble to do otherwise. And very few that manage that. Farscape possibly being one of the few that comes to mind. And I don't think Strange New Worlds has it. And I think that's one of the mistakes of Strange New Worlds is that, to me, Strange New Worlds, what brought me into it, which is Pike. And Pike's barely in most of the episodes. He's certainly not the lead. And whether that's to do with Anson Mount and availability, well, I don't know, or whether that's a deliberate thing. But I don't feel, I feel with these new shows, they kind of lack that anchorage of main character, Picard possibly being the exception to a degree. But their new characters, until the third season, I never thought were particularly good. Third season, new characters were a lot better. But yeah, characterizations. But sorry, I'm going off on a tangent myself. What I wanted to say, and this will probably all be edited out, what I wanted to say was my issue with Strange New Worlds, which brings us back to the beginning of this podcast where we're talking about Kirk, is that I don't feel that Strange New Worlds speaks in any way to the original series. And I've seen people now on social media actually sort of saying, well, Strange New Worlds has rewritten the original series. That didn't happen now. Because it, and I understand that, because the world it sets up in Strange New Worlds does not naturally ally with the original series. Although I would obviously argue, well, the original series, if you get rid of that, you get rid of the rest, because DeForest Kelly, Leonard Nimoy, Kirk, all appeared in those. The Troubles with Tribulations canonized the look of the original series. You can't get away from that being part of it. And again, this comes down to production ethos, obviously, is that there is this new ethos that we don't have to remain allied to previous aesthetics and cultural depictions of our characters. These are for a new era and a new audience, and I get that. And that's why I kind of would like them to be their own thing, because one of the things which I think has always hampered Star Trek more than any of the others is the fact that it's always constantly having to renegotiate that it's part of a timeline, which, as you say, doesn't make sense. And we want it to make sense, but there comes a point where, to me, like Chapel in Strange New Worlds, I actually like the character, but she does not benefit from becoming the Chapel in the original series. Somehow, going onto Kirk's ship neuters, for the better, the best, for any better word, most of the characters that come on there, which is an interesting idea, because, as I say, Kirk's ship is actually pretty militant, far more militant than Pike's, and maybe the free roam they get in Pike's is totally curtailed in Kirk's, but it's not. I mean, the aesthetic I can get by, you know, the difference in the ship, fine. What I find hard is, like, for instance, the revisioning of Vulcans. Vulcans are now very human. Spock is a heavily sexualized character. Vulcans are quite romantic in bed by the looks of it, which seems weird. T'Pring's mother is very much father is very human in the way he engages with food. It seems like that's ultimately been changed. As I say, Chapel either becomes a very boring adult, or you've got to ask why this Chapel in McCoy's sickbay takes so much shit from McCoy, because suddenly everything unravels. Spock massively unravels in virtually every way. And Kirk, I know you like Kirk, I don't. Because while I agree with you, I think it's interesting that they found the seriousness of Kirk, but as an actor, he doesn't play the charm. I do not find Kirk charming. I do not believe he's Kirk. He's just not.
Interesting.
He doesn't smile. One of my family pointed this out, and I noticed it. They said, Kirk always smiles. Whatever he's doing, if he's being military, he's very rarely, and you know you've really crossed the line, is when he doesn't smile. But all his orders, his conversations, the way he negotiates, there's always a charm to him. There's always a smile there. Even in Star Trek 3, where, as you say, when he's negotiating, trying to get the Enterprise back, there's that smile. You know, I see what you mean. And he goes on to something else.
You know, if you go back and watch Where No Man Has Gone Before, and Mitchell, you know, says to him, you know, you were downright grim or something like that, stack of books with that, you know, there is. So I think everything you say is valid. Everything. I also think there is a loophole here. And that is this, that we're seeing, in seeing the lead up to the original series, we're seeing the grim Kirk, the grim stack of books with legs, you know, that guy. Mm-hmm. And the Spock we're seeing is the one from the cage who was clearly, if the cage is to be canon, was clearly experimenting with his human half before something happened. And he suppressed that. And in the second season of Strange New Worlds, we may have find out what that was. I don't know. Or maybe we're still coming to it. But, you know, there's the scene where he touches the vibrating plant in the cage, mm-hmm. and he smiles openly. And, you know, he shouts on the bridge. He expresses very human disappointment that they're not going to go to Talos IV and answer the signal. You know, he's a much more human Spock. Now, you and I know that, of course, he hadn't been developed into the character yet that he became.
Yeah.
But there's that sort of early days loophole here of Kirk and Spock, that we're looking at the Spock from the cage. We're looking at the Kirk from Where No Man Has Gone Before. They haven't become themselves how we know them yet.
But so, can I just check? Yeah. Have you watched season 2, did you say?
Yes, you have watched it.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to say I am in Strange New Worlds for Pike as well. Great character. And I was disappointed by his, I mean, there's no other word to say, but his absence from it.
Yeah.
In the first season, I felt very central, or central enough. I felt he was very absent in the second season, and I thought that was to the show's detriment, but I still liked the show a lot. You know, I heard people. Go ahead.
No,
please. Well, I was going to say, so, you know, I there's this kind of theory, which, you know, is either total BS or which is actually kind of interesting about all of the Star Trek universe, except the Kelvin universe, which we have to put in as our sort of pocket universe set aside, right? Mm-hmm. Which is that if you watch the series in order, we've got Star Trek, the animated series, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager. That those are our sort of shows and movies in this timeline, right? But then the next one in order is Enterprise. And we think, okay, that's a prequel, but what if it isn't? What if it is taking on that time war, which is a product of later centuries? And so actually we watch these series in order. Enterprise is clearly far more advanced than we would have understood that time to be by watching the original Star Trek. The timeline has been tampered with. Okay, what feeds out of that? A very different Discovery and Strange New Worlds, where the timeline has been altered by the presence of these Romulans in Earth's history, the eugenics war, the time that occurred has changed.
Yeah, that's true.
So, it's like, so if you look at it this way, this is their very clever undercover way of working in these new things. Like, the Enterprise is clearly very different, far more advanced. All right. So it's like, if you watch it in that order and don't say no, what you need to do is watch it Enterprise, Discovery, Strange New Worlds, Star Trek, the original series. It doesn't work that way because there's no coherence there. Why do we go back like, you know, 50 years? Why does that Enterprise look like that? And we need to preserve Kirk's Enterprise looking like that because we see evidence of it in Trials and Tribulations, right? Mm. And we see it in Enterprise. But if we watch them in the order we're made, and you understand, and it was a key component of Enterprise, in fairness, for people who say this theory is half-baked, a key aspect of Enterprise was the time war, where people altering the past, the future, whatever, and changing the entire timeline. So understand, like, we begin in Star Trek with the original series, and that's the timeline. And then, boom, at this point where we say we're going into a prequel, it's still impacted by the place in the timeline we are now, because there are time agents from whatever, these centuries, the 24th century, the 25th century, who have altered that timeline. So theoretically, they could keep going into the future like that with revamped Next Generation, revamped whatever. Does this make any sense?
No, it does. Absolutely. Okay. And I get that. And I mean,
That's headcanon. I mean, that's headcanon.
We need our headcanons. I mean, I suppose, I think the only thing that I find frustrating, and again, talking to the same colleague I mentioned earlier, and they made a very good point. If you look at, with Series 2 and the sort of movement, especially with Spock and Chapel, you sort of almost take away a little bit of that. So, well, you know, the genesis of you know, contemporary slash fiction largely being Kirk and Spock. And, you know, that sort of connection there is kind of undermined and rewired. And I think this is where I have the biggest problem with Strange New Worlds. Is it, in the same way that I had a problem with Enterprise Season 4, is because what it rewrites on its own is fine and enjoyable. But suddenly, when you now look, and there's a lovely meme I saw the other day, which I think one of the Picard crew sent out, Metallus, I think it was, one of them did. And it was of Kirk and Khan playing off each other on their screen in Star Trek 2. And Kirk sort of saying, this is, I know this is because I dated your great-granddaughter and then it all fell apart. And, you know, and this is why you're attacking me. And Khan going, what? And Kirk going, what? You know, this whole thing that suddenly unravels everything because you create these layers which the original stuff just can't contain. You can't really rewatch Wrath of Khan now without thinking about Liana, is it? Lana, is it?
Lana, right.
Not Lana, no, Lana.
Absolutely. So the only way to interpret the Star Trek timeline then, even though we're sort of in the past of where we were, the only way to interpret it is forward.
Yes.
Does that make
sense? Which is your argument. I totally get it. But yeah. I suppose what I'm saying is then, is it not in some way still then an alternate universe? Because it's going forward in a way that it can't go back. So where our natural inclination, as you've said, is to try and loop and connect.
Right,
we can't, because it just does not work without undermining Chapel, Spock, or in one version or another, or Kirk, or Khan.
Right, right.
And
this is why, I mean, there is certainly an argument to be made that like Star Trek itself should always move forward. Like, yeah. Instead of naming Anson Mount's character Pike, or, you know, obviously you cannot, you know, call him, you know, Captain, and do it there. So we're not, it is sad, and it's probably the nature and the torment of Star Trek fans that something I feel as enjoyable as Strange New Worlds is, because I really like it. But we can enjoy it because of these things that keep niggling at us, like these details. It's like, oh, my God.
Again, Gorn are very derivative of a particular xenomorph in themselves.
Right, but, right. Absolutely.
I mean, and maybe in Season 3 we're seeing the movement towards a more sort of cerebral Gorn, I don't know, but what I found frustrating is, to me, rather than tap into the alien, to me the Gorn, as we see in that one episode of the original series, I actually think is a really interesting character. You don't get many enemy villains which not only are kind of aggressive but also justified, but they also have a sense of humor. That Gorn is constantly giggling to itself as it's doing its various things on that planet, and I love that. And that, to me, would be a far more interesting thing to build into a contemporary race than tapping into blatantly and unapologetically into alien, even down to the last episode where you have that face-off, which is Alien 3. And the reason for it is Alien 3 that already infected. I think with Strange New Worlds, I can understand its popularity. And I have enjoyed several episodes of it. I thought there's been some really good episodes. There's been some episodes, as I say, I've not been so fond of. But I just, again, if these were just brand new characters able to breathe,
it would be easier to accept. You know, for me, and I'll say this again, you know, and I don't mean to go back to Joel, my son. You know, I talk about him a lot. He's 16. He did not like Discovery, did not like Lower Decks. He says, you know, he didn't even really much like Picard, but he does like Strange New Worlds. And he said, you know, it captures the essence of Star Trek. He said that kind of, you know, he says to me, he says, Dad, something about Star Trek just makes me happy. And he said, but I don't feel it in all the Star Trek. He said, you put on the original series and I find myself smiling. Cause like I said, we watched the first like season and a half we watched together this summer. He said, and he'd seen them before some years back, but he said, I'd forgotten, you know, sort of how strange, but also how smart and how involving these are. And he said, you know, I'm just watching these and I'm just sitting here smiling. And he said, you know, I get why you love it. It just, there's something about Star Trek in that iteration that makes you feel happy, whatever those problematic things are, whatever the crisis is. There's something intrinsically happy and optimistic about it. And he said, you know, he said, the only one that gets that right, the only one of the spinoffs that gets that, he likes Voyager, he's not talking about the 90s ones. So the only one of the new ones that gets that right is Strange New Worlds. He said, you get that same feeling, you know, the Enterprise as this colorful ship of hope, you know, the people who these characters who take enjoyment in themselves and with each other. You know, Shatner called that joie de vivre, you know, esprit de corps, whatever you want to say. There's that that jauntiness that goes right up to the line of being tongue-in-cheek and campy and then pulls back. And Joel says, you know, Strange New Worlds is the only one that gets that, Dad. He said he's the only one, it's the only show that gets that.
And it's near to being single story rather than serial, almost.
Right. Right. And I think that's a piece of why he feels that, you know, like there was the very grim episode with the medical camp during the war.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I thought it was impressive. But Joel said, I don't like that. He said, you know, Star Trek should not be broody. He said, okay. Star Trek is happy. I mean, this is just a 16-year-old's impression of it. And I'm not saying he's right, but I also think as somebody who has not been, you know, 50 years invested in it, but who has watched it and has opinions about it, you know, it's sort of interesting for me to gauge, like, where's a 16-year-old's head on this? It's like, would a 16-year-old watch Strange New Worlds? Would a 16-year-old watch Discovery? You know, would they watch Picard?
I think that's something for Star Trek fans, especially ones like ourselves. I need to remember that, you know, ultimately, this show is not about appeasing the memories and legacies of old audiences. It's also about trying to draw in new audiences. And what some people might say, the show is overtly political for some of its choices in topics and characterizations. Perhaps because those topics and politics are not for you, but for younger generations where they're far more visible. And you need to accept that. And people who say, well, Star Trek now is too dark, and I've heard that several times, and I think, well, have you watched Deep Space Nine? Even to be fair, the Federation's in the original series, you know, it's a lot of corruption and bad bureaucracy there. It's never a perfect world. And I know that was, you know, Picard's been attacked a few times for that. And I think, no, I think Picard's doing what Star Trek's always done. I think the question is you've just got to sometimes take a breath and a step back and go, is this for me? Does Lower Decks make you laugh? If it doesn't, well, it's not for you. Is Prodigy too young for you? Well, that's a shame, but maybe it's not for you. Let someone else enjoy it. Sometimes tapestries just become so big you've got to accept they can't just be there to be for you.
Right. And, you know, if you go back to myth, if you go back to the story of Hercules was developed, that those stories came over several generations, and there were differences in those stories and inconsistencies in those stories, which we sort of now mindlessly accept, right? in those myths. For me, where I came to when I was tired of Star Trek and I felt Star Trek was suffering from that replicative fading, I thought I wanted to be young and new and colorful, and I wanted to be the thing that inspires young people. I wanted to be there for the next generation, how it was for me. It won't be the same, exact same thing, but it'll be like a translation of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think that's like sort of more important than the minutiae or details of the timeline. And to me, that's so obviously that's what I'm valuing, and that's not what everyone will value, and that's okay. But so for me, I look at Strange New Worlds anchored by Anson Mount, who's terrific, with a great cast. Uhura has had more to do in this show than any show or movie ever. Mm-hmm. And she's great. It's got the color, it's got the excitement, the sexiness, but it's also got the ideas. It's also so far clearly showing that it's willing to play with ideas and concept. Now, does it do those, you know, she's the alien. I'm not a big fan of the alien stuff. No, I'm not. But like the musical episode, the comet episode, you know, it's playing more with these kind of tropes in new ways than any Star Trek has done in a while. So for me, it's like, imagine you are 16 and your dad says you got to watch Star Trek. And you put this on, how does it make you feel? How does it make you feel about the future? How does it make you feel about humanity? How does, you know, to me, Strange New Worlds is capturing that in a way no other series does. You know, for me, the best Picard could muster, and it did muster it in me, was nostalgia for the Next Generation. I saw that ship and I saw that bridge. And I saw the crew back together. Yes, I felt it. But like that was the best it could call to, was a better day in Star Trek history. That's the past, dude. That is the past. If all you can do is call to the past, Star Trek will not be a myth like Hercules or what have you. And survive. But what I'm seeing from Strange New World is like there are people who are watching Star Trek for the first time.
Yeah.
And falling in love with it because of Strange New Worlds. Now, there are also the people who are resisting it tooth and nail because it's like Spock and Chapel. It's like, well, you know, as you said, not all Star Trek is for everybody. And if you don't like it, don't watch it. You know, that's always the answer. You don't enjoy it, don't go and try to enjoy it then if it's too different. But I do think Strange New Worlds is capturing in a way that some of the other Star Trek has not recently, sort of the essence of what Star Trek can be and what its value is philosophically.
I think Discovery seasons 3 and 4 have managed to find a bit of that as well. There's a stronger camaraderie. There's a stronger ethos. Its problem, I think, a little bit, again, goes back to, as you say, and what we were saying at the very beginning is, funnily enough, the aesthetic of Star Trek. And I don't want to say there is a singular aesthetic, because I think that would be very presumptuous. But I think something about, you know, the Strange New Worlds, as with the Pine, as with the original, the choice of colours in those Star Treks is actually very unusual to everything else. And while I do actually love the design work of the Enterprise in the movies, interior and exterior, you can't deny that you feel it's being touched by the sensibilities of the era in terms of trying to make things look more realistic, that more believable. Right. And I do wonder if we were to to distill what could be seen as the brand of Star Trek, to give it its own sense of character, maybe it is the vibrancy, is actually going back to the very first thing we talked about in this long
color.
Podcast. You know, is color really actually a bigger part of it than we tend to talk about? Is that a very important part of giving it a distinction and a feeling?
Right. Color and light. I mean, you know, I'm sorry. I am going to be one of those people who complains about how dimly lit the ships were in Picard. No, everyone's eyesight would be terrible if they had to work in those rooms. They would be terrible. Everyone, they're all gloomy and dark. And I mean, and you can hardly see. And I don't know if that was so that they could then transfer to the Enterprise D, and that is brighter, and it's like, you know, here we are, we're home. But again, what are you doing? Saying the past, so you're selling out the future of Star Trek to call to some past. You know, how does that make sense? How is that visionary? You know, I'm just going to be honest. I think the look of Picard is terrible. If I'd love them to do a Star Trek Legacy, great. Put in some goddamn light bulbs on the ship. It's just it doesn't have the vibrancy. Like, it just feels wrong for Picard and Riker to be walking around in that world with those dark, gloomy ships. I know other people disagree, and that's absolutely, they're entitled to their opinion. So
I think we should wrap up here. I think we've actually gone through most of the history of Star Trek. Obviously, there's loads of areas we could have tapped on further and explored. But I think it's really interesting that, you know, coming through this, that we have a sort of bookend at that beginning, talking about colour, talking about the hope and the vibrancy and the brand and the aesthetic, and where, and also pushing a few boundaries, which the original Star Trek did do. As we know, you know, there were some states which had issues with certain narrative points within the story, the famous right. Kirk Uhura kiss, for instance. So it was pushing a few boundaries, and here it is hopefully doing the same again. I think that's kind of a good place for it to be in its 57th year.
I do too. I have more hope now than I did 5 years ago and than I did 10 years ago that Star Trek, for being about the future, but has a place in our future in terms of widespread popularity. Because, you know, it's always been sort of like, you know, Marvel and Star Wars have been dominant, right? But, mm-hmm. you know, if you look at the streaming results, guess what's creeping up the chart, and it's been on the chart more than others than, you know, previous Star Wars. It's Strange New Worlds. You know, it's mm. it's been on there more than Picard. People are finding it, and I think starting to see it again. So maybe this is the beginning.
I may be in a world which has become so saturated with pessimism and, you know, constantly facing the truth of the difficulties and problems in our world, not on just a daily basis, but on a, you know, doom scroll basis. Perhaps you need shows which do have a bit more vibrancy, have a little bit of lift, and maybe that's where Star Trek carries its niche compared to, say, Star Wars, which is very much a world which was still reflecting the outcomes of World War II, you know. It right. was still a bit of that in there, isn't it? The imperialism, colonialism, yep. You know, threat of being invaded, of, you know, those are still discourses which are feeding into that as much as Kurosawa and Flash Gordon.
Right. So, and, you know, Star Trek achieved its popularity, you know, in a very dark time. And if you think about the 80s and 90s, yeah. when Star Trek became popular again, those were pretty good times. You know, the Iron Curtain had fallen, you know, the wall was down, peace and prosperity, the internet, you know, those were eras, you know, where things were pretty good. So now we're back in an era that feels a lot like, you know, the late 60s or early 70s, where we're questioning, we're like, are we going to make it? Are, you know, that was the question then. Were we going to make it? Are, you know, are we going to make it? I think a lot of people are feeling that now. And, you know, again, that's why I want Star Trek to exist in my son's life. I mean, you say, well, John, that's just a, you know, to pacify some, you know, I said, no, you always have to hope and dream about the future. And you have to have that representation. You have to have that vehicle that says, look what you can be. Sure, things are bad now, but look what you can be. That message is as powerful today with that color and vibrancy, if not more so, than it was in 1968. So I for one am glad for Strange New Worlds and where Star Trek is on its 57th birthday.
I think we will leave it with that. I think that's a nice end to this Ambly podcast through the history of Star Trek. I hope you enjoyed this. We will see you for another topic very soon, but in the meantime, as usual, go away.